This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We're all part of a global capitalist economy, a system that promised to benefit the rich and the poor alike. Yet, youth unemployment rate has been on the rise, salaries have stagnated for close to 20 years, despite the massive increase in cost of living, cost of education is at an all-time high, and the average millennial and Gen Z cannot even afford adequate housing on a single paycheck, despite it being a fundamental human right. So, what went wrong, and what's the solution here? I'm Dashan Johan, and this is Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box, a series that explores various issues through a leftist or socialist prism with Party Socialist Malaysia. On the fourth episode of this series, we'll be taking a look at our education system and philosophy. Joining me on the show is Gandipan Nanda Gopalan. He's the Secretary of Pemuda Socialist, which is Party Socialist Malaysia's youth wing. Welcome to the show, Gandhi. What would you say is or should be the goal of education? And does education under the current system of capitalism achieve that goal?
Thank you so much, Dashran, for having me. Education is supposed to make people understand the world. Education supposed to create not only a learned community, but also an empowered community. That is how I envision a society. And that is how I envision the role of education in today's world. And also, I believe it generates an ability for people to meaningfully participate in a society. And also, it should create and provide opportunity for people to develop their skills in an area of interest. However, under capitalism, it just merely creates a worker who being subservient for a capitalism kind of economy and also a structure. And also, it creates massive debt. It pushes a layer of young people to a debt, like they have to pay back hundreds of thousands of ringgit for another 10 to 20 years. Mm-hmm. So it creates a layer of people who is in debt, and it creates only a layer of workers subservient for the capitalism structure. So that is how I see education under capitalism.
Karl Marx once wrote, "The ideas of the ruling class are in every epoch the ruling ideas, i.e. the class which is the ruling material force of society is at the same time its ruling intellectual force," end quote. I wonder, Gandhi, if you think that this holds true today, that perhaps our education system is designed in a way to make society smart enough to do the work the ruling class wants us to do, but not smart enough to push back against the very ruling class itself.
I agree. Exactly. That is how education system functions under the capitalism. It just echoes the idea of the ruling class inside the system. So I can give you some example in this. So how many petroleum engineers, for example, are also aware, consciously aware of the role of oil and gas industry in accelerating climate crisis? So how many civil engineers and how many urban planning, those who are graduating from urban planning, are also consciously aware that we need more parks, community center, instead of malls and more high-ending residential units? Based on our evaluation here, I believe, yes, Karl Marx was right. He has always been right. It just echoes whatever the ruling idea is in the education system.
Right. And does our current education system encourage critical thinking?
It does, but within a box. So, for example, those who are from science stream can resonate me here. So, you learn projectile motion, and you learn projectile motion using a ball. And critical thinking is when you apply that knowledge in rocket launching and plane launching.
Right.
It doesn't fall outside that particular box. It doesn't make you think what is the impact to the economic society and stuff related to that. So, and also the critical thinking centered around the propaganda of the government. Like, for example, our history lessons today always portray certain political parties and certain elites as the savior of the society. And they are also using that particular notion of being the saviors until today to win the elections. But how many of us are actually going out of the textbook lessons and learning about the alternative history out there? So I really believe there is a critical thinking, but it's being applied just to serve the industrial needs,
right,
and to generate more profits to the capitalism, but not to being useful and to create a society that we need and we want.
When we talk about the way our education system is structured, there's always this grand debate around high-stakes exams. Because if you look at the world that we're living in most countries, certainly holds true to Malaysia, Singapore, many other countries, or most countries around the world, where fundamentally, when the moment you step into schools, you know, you're told that, okay, you need to get straight A's for UPSR, then you need to get straight A's for PMR, and then people are very competitive. Everybody is trying to get number one in class, get the straight A's, and the examination standards are of intense level, and so on and so forth, right? Do you think there's a problem with high-stakes exams?
Yes, it's making the education system looking as if people go to school and memorize things just to score the exam well and they just graduate. So it doesn't make someone think critically, as we have discussed before. And also, there is a problem because the economic field is not a level playing field. There are people who can afford additional materials, private coachings, private tuitions, who can definitely score better than people who can't afford all those materials and private tuitions. Mm-hmm. And there is also additionally the internet issues, where people who can't afford to have internet in their houses, especially during the COVID, you know, that explains 25,000 people dropouts in the SPM recently. So high stakes exam, I understand the existence of exam to evaluate, but the field is not same for everyone.
Right.
Yeah, the economic disadvantages definitely affect the people, underprivileged people, in scoring well, in faring well in the exams.
Right. So as a socialist, right, how would you respond to people who say, then how are you going to evaluate people? If you remove high-stakes exams, then how do I know whether my children are progressing? Or, you know, if I remove my high-stakes exams, then what's the point of going to school? You know, I can just, you know, my children can just go around and play and ponteng school and all. It doesn't matter. What, there's no exams. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to this?
One thing is, we can have school-based assessments.
Mm-hmm.
And besides school-based assessments, we can have group learnings, interactive learnings inside the school itself. It doesn't have to be competitive and push individualistic elements, because that is what exams-based assessments and lessons are pushing a student towards. It creates an individualistic society.
What do you mean by that?
One student thinks putting himself first.
Right.
You know, and then they carry that particular mindset and perspective towards the society. And that is why it's harder to organize, you know, in order to fight something in the society, to pull people together and fight for a better cause. It's a bit harder in today's world, because that is how our education system is.
Right.
So in the school, besides being a giving assessment, we can also have all these interactive way of learning, group learnings, and assessments can be made within the school itself. It doesn't have to be competitive and comparative.
Do you think the nature of high-stakes exams and the way our education system is structured around that benefits the rich and the privileged?
That's right. I agree with that. Because generally, the privileged people who can afford all this can score better. That is my observation in the society. And that also explains, because 25,000 people who are supposed to sit for SPM didn't sit for the SPM this year. And it can be due to poverty, and it can be due to the confidence issue as well. Because those who can't afford to prepare for the major exams, can't afford to go to the classes and attend the classes online, they do not have the confidence, so they dropped out. So there are economic elements here. And of course, it gives massive advantage for those who can afford all these additional materials and basic needs.
Right. So when it comes to education, especially in Malaysia, right, Gandhi, the general consensus over the past few years, now this may be anecdotally or whatnot, but when you talk to a lot of people over the past few years, right, there is this sense that our public education public schools in Malaysia has deteriorated over the years, that these days, anyone who can afford opts to send their children to private schools, while those who cannot afford private education prefer to send their children to, let's say, SJKC versus just regular Sekolah Kebangsaan. Would you agree that our public school system, the Sekolah Kebangsaan, has sort of seen a drop in standard over time?
Okay, I think there are two issues here.
Okay.
One is we have an underlying issue ongoing within the public schools. It doesn't matter if it is SJKC, SJKT or SK.
Okay.
We have a real problem in lack of funding. We can see a lot of schools outside of urban areas. Their infrastructures are run down. Their roofs are leaking. They do not have better roads. There are schools who do not have field. There are schools who can't afford to run annual sports day. They are depending on corporate funding and funding from, you know, rich people around their area. So we need to really address this issue in order to gain confidence among the public that, you know, we can send people, we can send children to the public schools.
Right.
And also, when I speak about running annual sports event, it's happening in the urban areas. I do not want to mention the school, but I know a school which is depending and requesting funds from the corporates to run their annual sports event. So if you can't run an annual sports event, how about other programs in the school? How are you running? How about your sports equipments? Are they up to date? Are students are actually playing in your school during their PJK time hours? And also, there is an issue where the classes are huge for the teachers. There are students. There are more than 30 students in classes, which I think it's a bit heavy for teachers today with the administrative tasks that they need to do. So with a lot of things ongoing where the teachers are not in a happy state and do not have the proper appropriate material condition to teach these students, and students do not have the proper material condition to learn, it diminishes the possibility of an effective learning to take place in the school. So when it comes to SJKC, I believe because, as we all know, there is a certain biasness and discrimination in the employment where the employers tend towards, there are a lot of employments today where they are hiring and they prefer hiring Mandarin speakers.
Right.
So that pushes parents to send their students, their children to the SJKC to pick up the language. Here the issue, again, people sending to SJKC not to satisfy the desire of learning the language. It's to satisfy the market demands, capitalism demands, to fit in the employment sectors.
When you say lack of funding, who are the funds supposed to come from and why are they not getting the funds from there?
I believe because the current order is neoliberal order. The neoliberal capitalism tends to give more advantages for the capital owners and also capitalists, of course. So when you are not able to fund a school, it also creates a possibility of creating a private school.
Right.
There, you see, so that is how the policy planning takes place. The fund should come from the government.
Right.
We do not have to depend on corporate funding. We do not have to depend from the rich people around the society to fund from the school. So we need to step up in this. The government needs to step up in releasing more funds. Make sure the public schools do not have to back around to run a basic annual program in school. So this needs to be addressed.
Right.
Yes.
Absolutely. Speaking of private schools, they are sprouting like mushrooms. Is this a problem?
Yes, it's definitely a problem where it creates a class difference among the society. It deepens the class difference across the class. And also it creates a situation where better education can only be accessible for people who can afford it.
Right.
And it pulls away good teaching energy from the public sector towards the private sector.
What do you mean by that?
Teachers, like, for example, in the public school, may have some plans to join private sectors because they need an immediate good income now. So they may join the private sectors. And also they As far as from my observation, I can see that they also have tendency to pull in industrial people to teach. Mm-hmm. Like if you have graduated from maths, for example, and you have worked in a statistical side of the industry and stuff, you have higher chance to be a maths teacher in the private sectors. So it looks as if they have better teaching energy. And they are using it to pull in more rich people. But subsequently, it creates a divide across the class in the society. And our belief is private schools should go and public schools need to step up.
On the show with me today is Gandipan Nandagopalan. He's the Secretary of Pemuda Socialis, which is PSM's youth wing. After the break, we discuss access to education in Malaysia. Keep it here on Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Darshan Johan, and on the show with me today is Gandipan Nandagopalan. He's the Secretary of Pemuda Socialis, which is PSM's youth wing, and we're talking about education. So, Gandhi, we know for a fact that there are indeed good teachers in public schools. But are you saying that because of how well-funded private schools are with their ultra-wealthy owners, they can lure teachers away from the public school system into the private sector?
From my understanding, the pay grade I prefer is in the government because they provide a job guarantee with also the pension.
Yes.
But in the private sector, they can pay you a good amount of money, but there is no job guarantee in the private sector. My opinion here is government should step up in the starting salary of teachers in this economy. They really need to increase the starting salary of the teachers because I believe the starting salary is around 2K. It's way lesser than what the private sector today can offer to the fresh grads. So I'm not saying that public schools have lesser good teachers and private schools have good teachers. It's just that lack of funding in public schools can give really negative implications in terms of teaching and learning in school, which the public may not feel confident when looking at the infrastructure of the schools. So they prefer, okay, my child will learn better in the private school, looking at their new buildings, their new facilities and stuff. So it can create the possibility for people to lean towards sending their children to the private sectors.
Right. Yes. Now, you said your perspective is, let's say, in your ideal world, private schools should go. What would you say to people who love the idea that private schools exist because it provides choice? It provides different styles of teaching. For example, if we are saying like, oh, we don't like high stakes exams, the regimented idea of it, some private schools will say, you know, we will focus on different styles of teaching. We will borrow ideas from Norway, from Finland, from all these countries who are, you know, widely seen as having more progressive education styles, for example. So how would you respond to that? You know, that argument that private school gives us that choice. If people who want to, you know, focus on more creativity, let's say private schools, they say, I'm going to teach swimming, I'm going to teach you creative writing, all sorts of things like that. And also when we look at tertiary education, right? Private education offers really concrete sort of choices sometimes because there seems to be more academic freedom. Mm-hmm. You go to a lot of private tertiary universities, even in Malaysia, you can learn about, you know, feminism. You can learn about all gender studies in a very nuanced way, not in a conservative way, for example. You'll have more room and space for debates among students. So how would you respond to that, that actually private education gives people choice?
Education as a human right. It should be universal. It should be accessible to everyone. But when a public sector comes into a framework of market, any public sector, not only education, also healthcare, housing and stuff, when it comes under the framework of market, it can only be accessible to those who can pay, who can afford. And we believe everyone should have the accessibility towards good education and education that provides choice. And as a government, it can provide such condition within the public sector. but it doesn't want to. So right. It is what it is today because of the government policy. Mm-hmm. We need to change that. And whatever that the people desire as choice, it can be provided in the public sector. It doesn't have to be necessarily only in private sectors. And people doesn't necessarily have to pay thousands of ringgit just to afford the choices. Mm-hmm. It can be in the public sector itself. That is what socialists are fighting for. And when it comes to tertiary education, same can be applied in the tertiary education as well. It's been mushrooming a lot recently. Our last built public university, I can't remember last, like, you know, I think it's around 2009, 2010. Right. Yeah, so we do not have any plans, upcoming plans in building new public universities. So that is why there are a lot of private universities are coming up. So we need to change that. People shouldn't be in debt just to study. People shouldn't pay to get the education. That needs to be from the community, from the government, from the country itself, for its residents.
When you talk about private schools, you know, shouldn't be on the market, from, let's say, a Malaysian perspective, right? How do we tackle this issue? Is it so much of coming in and putting in a policy and saying, no, now from today onwards, no more private schools, finish. Mm-hmm. We're not going to allow you to build anymore. Or would it be come from a perspective where we just improve our public education to such a fantastic degree that everyone is like, yeah, I can afford, but why would I want to waste money sending my kids to private school
right.
when I can get
right.
the same thing mm-hmm. in a public school?
Right. I'm with the second one. Right. I do not believe in coming in between and then enforcing a law mm-hmm. that prevents the private school. No. Especially when we do not have such capacity in the government schools in the very first place. Mm-hmm. We need to build that capacity. We need to make sure the schools run in an ideal way. And when running in an ideal way, then only we can gain the confidence from the public. So we need to build that capacity first. Then we can think about restricting the growth of private sectors and private schools and institutions in this country. But I believe in starting to empowering and improving our public education first.
Let's talk about access. How bad is access to education in Malaysia? What is the reality of the situation?
So when we talk about lack of access, we really need to go outside of urban areas to evaluate the situation, especially in Sabah Sarawak. Mm-hmm. Because we have around every month we can see how students coming to boat to learn to get the broadband, how teachers are going using the boat to teach the students in the boat, because the teachers and the student can't get the internet access in the school and nearby the houses. It is that bad. Teachers are walking miles to teach. So the accessibility problem is real. Mm-hmm. When we are talking about accessibility, there is a physical accessibility issue as well, like where we do not have good infrastructure and good transportation to school is a right. real issue as well in the in rural area. We do not have to go to very far to evaluate the situation. When we go to Kuala Selangor itself, we can see how students have to wait for buses for long, and they have to carpool because no buses are coming to pick them up to mm-hmm. go to school. There are cases which is happening just outside of our Klang Valley, mm-hmm. you see. And COVID really exposes the limitation of IT, the usage of IT in the education system. It exposes how bad the accessibility towards internet. Because now internet is a basic human needs.
Right.
Yeah. So, but a lot of people can't afford the internet. And they are not. They couldn't have it at their houses,
right?
To accommodate the learning process of their kids, and also there is also issue where a lot of students do not have necessary tabloids mm-hmm. to do the learning process mm-hmm. at the home. So the accessibility issue is real. Mm-hmm. It may not be the situation in the urban area, but in the rural area, and also in semi-urban area. there are a lot of issues like lack of internet, lack of infrastructure, lack of accessibility, like as in the physical accessibility to go to school itself is a bit of hassle, you know. So this need to be addressed and needs to be overcome.
What is the impact of education inequality, the larger impact?
It creates the class line and it retains the unending loop of poverty. Those who can't afford good education stays in the loop. Mm-hmm. They stay as a worker who needs to be in debt to get education. Mm-hmm. And then they spend another 10 to 20 years to pay the debt when they can use that disposable income for the family and for themselves. But they ended up paying to the institution. So it creates an unending loop of poverty, and it reinforces the class divide in the society.
Right.
So, yeah.
So we've talked a lot about the problems.
Mm-hmm.
What are the solutions here? As a socialist, how do you think we should restructure our education system in Malaysia, and how do we go about getting there?
I believe the first step would be increasing the funding. We need to increase our funding to public institution by at least 10% at start in our annual budgets. We need to rebuild the infrastructure in a way it can accommodate good environment for teaching and learning for teachers and students. In a way where the schools and the institutions can have programs apart from annual sports day, without depending on corporate funding.
Mm-hmm.
So it creates a good environment for teaching and learning to take place. We need to create more classrooms. We don't have to congest the classroom, like, you know, having 30 plus students in one classroom with one teacher. The situation mm-hmm. needs to change. The Scandinavian model is regarded as best model because they, part of the program is they have two teachers, right. One who's teaching, one who's guiding
right.
when the classroom takes place. It can be a good model that we can follow mm-hmm. with our essence as well here in Malaysia. So we need to start there. And we need to go towards abolishing the PTPTN loan. PSM has been vocal since years ago about this because it limits the young people to spend in the economy. It restricts the young people to spend on themselves and in the economy, especially when the pay of the fresh grads are not increasing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just around 2,000 and 2,500 yeah. for the past 10, 15 years. And the loan, but the loan is keep increasing.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of private education is keep increasing. And they need to build a lot of public institutions in order to replace the private institution. People shouldn't be in debt
mm-hmm.
just to acquire education. Education is human rights and it needs to be out of the market framework.
Yeah. All right. Before we wrap this conversation up, would you mm-hmm. have a final message for us?
As I mentioned before, anything comes under the market is problematic. Housing, healthcare, education. And market solution is not the best way forward anymore. And I think a lot of countries out there preferably choosing candidates who are talking, voicing out against the market solutions. And we can see that a lot in the Latin America, especially. Mm-hmm. Recently, a leftist president won in Colombia. That's a very good thing and very encouraging for a progressive movements around the world. So we need to organize in order to fight the racist and capitalistic nature of the economy and society. We need to organize. Everyone needs to organize. It doesn't have to come from a small group of political people who keeps talking about it. We need people to constantly voice out against all this.
On that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Gandhi. That was Gandhipan Nandagopalan. He's the secretary of Pemuda Socialist, which is Parti Socialist Malaysia's youth wing. And if you missed any part of our conversation, you can also check us out on podcasts. We are available on the BFM app, bfm.my, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.